ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Where are you all from? Germany mostly, is it? Okay. Others? Germany and Czech.
Bulgaria.
Okay. Holland. Yeah, I was told that the German brahmacharis would like me to speak to them, so when I thought of German brahmacharis, I thought of 1977. I wasn't there, I'd left England already to go to India. But I even in India we heard of it, it became something famous, how the German brahmacharis came in to see Prabhupada, about 100 of them, in Bhaktivedanta manner, and like smashing their heads on the floor, offering obeisances. It's like you could hear the sound of them. They'd offer their obeisances. So, when we think of German and we think of brahmachari, both words we think of something very rigid and heavy. But actually, the stereotyped idea we have of a brahmachari, I don't know what it's like now, but it used to be the idea of brahmacharis being very rigid. That's one side. That means brahmacharis should be strictly practicing. Otherwise, there's no point. Why should you join the Hare Krishna movement and not join it at the same time? It seems strange. I mean, if you're committed to Krishna and attaining Krishna, then why, when you have this knowledge, then why do anything else but commit to being fully Krishna conscious in any ashram? Even one may be in the Grihastha ashram, but if you have this knowledge, then certainly one has to pursue doing whatever is required. Although it's understood that in family life some encumbrances and disturbances which certainly make it more difficult to do the things that are favorable for our Krishna consciousness. So brahmachari life is a great opportunity. And obviously, one should take it very seriously. So, brahmachari life, like we say, when we think of brahmachari, we think of rigid, because yes, then we've come here because we want to attain Krishna, and to attain Krishna, then if we follow the process, then we are. That is the path to attain Krishna. If we don't follow, then we're not properly brahmacharis. So brahmachari means rigid, but actually brahmachari means not some fanaticism, enthusiasm certainly, but cultivating sattva-gun. This is very much emphasized both in practice and precept. You know what that means? Practice and precept. That means theoretical and practical. Precept means instruction. So not just talking about it, but actually doing it. This is stressed very much by Bhaktivedya Purna Maharaj, who's he's one of the few sannyasis in our movement who, the only other one I can think of offhand is Ganapati Swami, who's not very well known. He stays in our movement because he doesn't travel. Well, he does travel, but he travels mostly in America and keeps a small group of brahmacharis with him and trains them. So Vidya Purna Maharaj is the other one who trains specifically lives with brahmacharis and trains them, small groups. And he emphasizes very much on this point of subtlety. But as I say, by practice and precept, he's exemplifying subject existence. Brahmachari means he's Brahma means the Vedas. The Vedas, there are other meanings also. Brahmachari study the Vedas, they study Shastra. And it's intense and it's rigid, but their lifestyle that is very much separate within the traditional brahmacharya. Well, if we go back a long way, that means in the forest, and more recently, it's known better in ashrams, it's maybe not in the forest, in a holy place, it's even better in the forest. Now, modern Eskom brahmacharya, especially in the West, I think most of you are, many of you are engaged in preaching. Outgoing, it requires a high energy level to even get into that. It requires a lot of enthusiasm to preach Krishna consciousness. But the enthusiasm of the enthusiasm which is the very basis of spiritual life. Utsaha. Utsaham Mistriyam Bhayat Tatkat Kamakavata. Of the six lakshanam, characteristics of persons who are competent to make advancement in spiritual life. Characteristics which are favorable for advancement in Krishna consciousness. The first is mentioned is enthusiasm. But the enthusiasm of sattva-gun is sustainable. It will remain and increase. If that's what I'm sustainable, I'm explaining. It's that which can be maintained. Enthusiasm of Rajagun, it is either not sustainable or it's sustainable for the wrong reason. Rajagun means one is thinking of one's own enjoyment. So enthusiasm doesn't necessarily mean that it's rajas. You can be very enthusiastic. In sattva-gun, one is, even if one is supposed to be cultivating material desires to be noticed, to be number one, to be thought of as a good brahmachari, name, fame, and glory. So this material desire inevitably ends in disappointment and frustration, because all material desires they inevitably end in frustration and disappointment. Because if the desire is fulfilled, one becomes frustrated and disappointed because it doesn't bring the happiness that we are hoping from that. And generally it's not fulfilled, or only partially fulfilled, or fulfilled in a way that we didn't expect or like, just that we may become noticed by others and praised by others, but then we're given some kind of responsibility which we don't want, because we're not really interested in serving. We just wonder. So then we become, or If it's not fulfilled again, we become frustrated and disappointed. Whereas the enthusiasm in Sattva Gun, that is sustained. Even enthusiasm means we have enthusiasm to perform some activity. So the enthusiasm in Rajagun means that's generated from attachment to the result. But that doesn't mean that in sattvic enthusiasm, we're not trying to get a result. It doesn't mean, sometimes it's misunderstood, we're not attached to the result so that we don't care. No, that's tamasic, to not care what happens. But in sattvagun, one is conscientious, he's aware of what I'm doing. I'm trying to serve Krishna. So everything should be done perfect. Everything should be done very nicely for Krishna. So someone in sattva gun can become angry. And maybe just like Srila Prabhupada. There's so many instances of Srila Prabhupada becoming angry. That's not rajasic. That's from the platform of Shuddha Sattva, of the desire to serve Krishna. And when he sees that Krishna is not being served properly, devotees are not serving properly, then he becomes angry. So he may say he's attached to the result. Yes, he's attached to the result for Krishna. That's called yukta vairagya. That anasaktasya vishayan, not attached to anything for sense gratification. Anasaktasya vishayan yataham upayunjataha, but still involved with various activities, nirbandha Krishna sambandhe, seeing the relationship of everything to Krishna, yuktam vairagya muchyate. So this is called yukta vairagya. So a devotee is in sattva gun, he's enthusiastic, his enthusiasm is sustained because even if things don't go as he expected, even if things go wrong, even if the result is not attained, his motive is to serve Krishna, and he'll go on serving Krishna. The result is the service. For him, the opportunity to serve is what he wants. And he's attached to the result in as much as he wants to see that Krishna is nicely served, and he does his best but to fulfill it. But on the other hand, if things don't go properly, if the material nature doesn't, or things don't work out as he'd hoped or expected, then still he just goes on serving Krishna. So this kind of enthusiasm is required. The fanatical enthusiasm, that won't last. It's not real spiritual enthusiasm in the first place. So one should have this enthusiasm and study Shastra. Brahmacharya life is specially meant for studying Shastra. Now in modern Brahmacharya life, there's a lot of service to do for the preaching mission. Now we have intensive Shastra study courses. But I think you'll all experience this, that you actually learn more when you serve and study side by side. That if you're only studying, you can learn theoretically, but the realization doesn't happen. And the enthusiasm to study is not so much if you're not engaged in practical service, especially preaching service. So these courses are good. Move a little bit forward, a little squat. These study courses are good, but side by side, preaching goes on, then the realization comes and the enthusiasm to study is also there. This, at the same time, with the service and study, but definitely it's required that Brahmacharya study Shastra. Shastra for us is perfect. Other things, other generally Shastra, but for us, means to read Prabhupada's books again and again and again. You have to take time out to do that. At a festival, there's not much reading. There's maybe more hearing. But a general routine, and it is good to have a routine, to have a fixed. That's also very good for Brahmacharya, a fixed routine. Not to be slaves of the routine, but the general routine is very helpful to regulate our lives, which helps to make the mind peaceful. It's good time for them. It helps to make us productive, useful in ourselves. So study of Prabhupada's books is very helpful. Group study, if you're in a small group of brahmacharis, maybe traveling Sankirtan, that can be very helpful also. Study one of Prabhupada's books, maybe Life Comes From Life, or any small group groups together, reading, discussing, that can be very useful, but study must be there to help keep us convinced and increase our conviction, and that will help us to see Krishna through Shastra. And being fixed in Prabhupada's books with the firm faith that this is the truth. There's nothing beyond this. Again, not fanatically. We're not Bible thumpers. You know, we believe in the Bible, but why? That even why we should do that is expressed in the language of patience within the books themselves. So, not blindly, intelligently we should understand the books. Now, intelligently doesn't mean that we doubt and reject everything, but intelligently means we apply our intelligence to understand how this is true and what are the consequences of that, and how is this to be applied in practical life, and the intelligence should become sharpened by reading Srila Prabhupada's books. Intelligence should be sharpened so that we are equipped to discriminate between reality and illusion. Bhagavatam begins with this. That the Bhagavatam begins by stating that this knowledge is the knowledge by which we can discriminate between reality and illusion. So one who's not cultivating desires for sense gratification, who is cultivating the desire to surrender to Guru and Krishna, and studying Prabhupada's books, and the intelligence should become very clear for understanding what is real and what is illusion. This discrimination is called vivek, by which we can see according to understanding what are the teachings of Shastra, and that we have to follow Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Kind of discrimination is essential in modern ISKCON today, because as a result of whatever the reason may be, probably, you know, this it seems to be typical of institutional religions, it's a necessity for, and of course we shouldn't think of Krishna consciousness as a mundane religion, but for the sake of spreading the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and preserving what has been spread and cultivating within the members of this is those who have taken to Krishna consciousness, cultivating the Krishna consciousness, then an institution is required. But at the same time, an institution brings with it its drawbacks. So, at the present time, we find within ISKCON various ideas and practices which are not very Krishna conscious. And often, it's one of the drawbacks of an institution that some of the members, or even the whole thing can get hijacked. Some of the members, they may not remain on the path of searching for the ideal, following the ideal. So, in the name of the ideal, they may present something else and quote from Prabhupada's books and this and so one should, especially this is required for brahmacharis, or it's required for everyone, but those who are determined to remain on the ideal of searching, that we are here for serving Krishna and the abhilashita shunyam, without any, this is our aim, to become free of all material desires. So by studying Prabhupada's books carefully and surrendering to his mission, and one should develop the discrimination by which he can distinguish reality from illusion, even within the society of devotees. Without which our Krishna consciousness can become rather fuzzy. Fuzzy, you all know this word? It means unclear. Unclear, yeah. Unclear. Because in the institute there may be, without any one clear authority, as when Srila Prabhupada was here personally among us, then someone will say, well, there will be different opinions. Just like, well, it doesn't matter whether you follow very soon. It doesn't matter whether you come to Mangalarti or not. It doesn't matter whether you chant 16 rounds. You just chant, but with feeling, with love. So you'll hear things like this. You'll hear. So those who are not fixed in the ideal, according to Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, they may become bewildered like this. And it's also inviting for us. It seems attractive that, well, I don't have to follow all these difficult things like getting up in the morning. And there's so many things. Well, there's not that much difference between kami food and devotee food. Anyway, you can offer it and make it into prasadam. So it may seem inviting or tempting to practice Krishna consciousness in lesser ways. If you think, well, it's all the same. Everyone's a devotee, but there is a difference. And a brahmachari, he lives the difference. He's not compromised. He's committed to the ideal. Otherwise, there's no meaning to be a brahmachari. So he can see by studying Srila Prabhupada's books what is the difference between this compromised half or less or somewhere in between practice of Krishna consciousness and that sort of Krishna consciousness. Or actually, Krishna consciousness means commitment to Krishna. Otherwise, not Krishna consciousness. Not Krishna consciousness. It's consciousness of something else. Or it's not Krishna consciousness as the Acharyas gave it. Prabhupada didn't come to this world to teach us some kind of watered down mundane religion. But he came to rescue us from that. So that good, clear intelligence should be there to discriminate. That so many people may say so many things, and maybe because of institutional necessity or whatever, we don't do that, or many things are allowed which maybe shouldn't be allowed, but our intelligence should be clear. to choose our association and live according to the ideal of our acharyas, so we can discriminate between what is that's one of the symptoms of sattva gun. We can discriminate between what is, discriminate on the basis of shastra, of what is favorable for spiritual cultivation, which is unfavorable. So that, I don't usually speak much. I'm often asked to speak at brahmachari meetings. I don't usually speak much because pretty much everything I wanted to say is in the book, Brahmachari and Krishna Consciousness. I spoke some things now. So if there are any questions, you could ask.
Could you please briefly describe some of the wrong conceptions that are circulating?
Circulating in our movement? Well, the idea, there's one idea that, a wrong idea that's relevant to brahmachari is that practice, that there's almost something wrong with practicing strictly. This is fanaticism. But to practice strictly is the only thing to practice Krishna consciousness, otherwise it's not really Krishna consciousness at all. And fanaticism, as Srila Prabhupada has explained, that means it's one aspect of practicing anything without proper knowledge. Fanatic means one who is attached to doing something without proper understanding. One who's attached to doing something for the right reason, he's not a fanatic because he can adjust that because he has a good reason. Someone may say it's fanatical to to go to Mangalati every day, but it's not because it's given by the acharyas and it's highly conducive to Krishna consciousness. So it doesn't cause any harm to others, rather it's great benefit to others, so how can that be called fanaticism? It's just... but it would be fanatical to, for instance, insist that someone who's very sick go to Mangalati, or someone who's... There may be some occasions for not going, and one who's... very, very. Someone may even still then go, but there may be some reason not to go. Just like, for instance, there may be some instance. You get a phone call that your father's dying or something, and then you immediately leave and go to see him and chant Hare Krishna to him before he dies. So to say that no, you should stay in that circumstance, that might be a fanaticism. Here's something from one of our acharyas, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He told that you hear Harikatha. Now, if someone says, but my son is dying, I can't stay, I have to go. He says, let him die, you stay and hear Harikatha. So, is that fanaticism? He was emphasizing the importance of how important it is to hear. It's a question of life and death. It's actually a question of life. You know this, it's a saying in English, do you have that? You may have it. It's a question of life and death. It means it's something so important that life and death rests on it. Yes, Krishna consciousness is a matter of life and death. If we don't take the Krishna consciousness very seriously, then again we have to be born. Again we have to die. So the idea that we should, that to practice seriously is fanatic, there's something wrong with that. That idea is, in itself, is wrong. And it's a discouragement to Krishna consciousness. Actually, if you're going to practice, then you should, if we accept what is stated in Bhagavad Gita, then we have to dedicate ourselves to it. It's not something you can take half-heartedly. So to say like that, that it doesn't matter, or it doesn't matter if you're a little relaxed and this and that, well, that's not true. Little relaxed means a person by nature may be relaxed, but his practices he should take seriously. Now, it may be fanatical to try to force to do others to take to practice Krishna consciousness very strictly, with just pushing them to do so without trying to raise them to the level of knowledge by which they would voluntarily do that. Force will not stand, Srila Prabhupada said. It's another English saying. You can't force people to follow. But there should be some pressure also, because there may be some brahmacharis who are a little weak or something like that. So some pressure is good also. But ultimately it has to come from voluntarily, based on the platform of knowledge. Why I'm doing what I'm doing. So that's one example. Yeah, some of the things I can say, maybe you can buy common bread and offer it and it's all the same. No, you have to be very strict and look at it. We can't pollute our own consciousness. So anyway, you get the idea. The whole idea that don't practice strictly, and everything's all the same, whether you practice strictly or not, and it's all the same. It's not all the same. The rules and regulations given by the acharyas are to help us advance in Krishna consciousness. If we follow, then that is the formula for making advance. Not going to make the same advancement. So we can't say it's all the same. Is there any other questions? Yeah, please. I don't think that's actually a Shastric statement, but the word is das, which is given in Shastra. The word is das. Dasavan acharan nicho. Which traditionally the guru-disciple relationship, especially in the brahmachari relationship, as Lord Krishna himself showed when he was a brahmachari, is to be the menial servant. It means like a slave, actually, but it's based on affection. It's not an exploitive relationship. Slave means exploitive relationship, and dog also means that the dog and the master. It's a relationship of mutual. One's the master and one's the servant is based on mutual sense gratification. So, dasavan nicho, guru sudrida, sohrida sudrida sohrida. Because of a very strong bond of affection, then he takes the position of a menial servant. Yeah. That's a more. Maybe saying dog gives some idea, but as I just explained, it's a more precise understanding. Then what if your authorities say something else in the temple?
Yeah, yes, addition to the question that the authority in the temple represents Master.
In the presence of the spiritual master? Our representatives.
Yeah.
But to some extent, they're representatives as much as they represent.
Yeah.
letter to Ranjan Swami. It was published in a book of letters to his disciples. Authorities in the temples, but I won't say that the temple authorities say there. I wouldn't use the term of Shikshu Guru because he said too many times I've seen that the authorities misuse and they don't have the affection or well-being of the devotee in mind to the extent that they should be called guru. So I mean, I'm just summarizing. He said this. It was like 90% of the letter was saying how you should follow your authorities, but then 10% he also said that there are cases where, you know, he said it, quite a few cases where the authorities they're not thinking of the. Would seem that they're not thinking of the long-term benefit of the devotee. So he said, I don't want to use that term Shiksha Guru for them. So a lot of discrimination has to be there to see that. Srila Prabhupada very much emphasized that devotees should follow authorities. I just read yesterday actually that in Australia one devotee did devotees follow their temple authorities? Prabhupada said yes. In all circumstances, Prabhupada said yes. On the other hand, there were occasions when Prabhupada would correct the temple authorities, just like it comes up in Prabhupada Lilamrita, where Srila Prabhupada asked the devotees in Los Angeles, are you all chanting 16 rounds? And he asked the devotees individually, and one said, well, I try to, Prabhupada, which meant they're not, obviously. And then Prabhupada said, why not? You vowed to chant 16 rounds, and said, well, the authorities told that if you just do service, it's just as good. And then Prabhupada chastised him, said, who's told this? Who's told this? It's not. I never told that. That's not correct. You have to chant 16 rounds. So. There's an authority. What's the word? Leadership crisis in our society. I was just speaking with someone. I had the great good fortune of, without knowing, neither of us knew, we just met at the airport, we were on the same flight, long flight, Delhi to Munich. So I was discussing with him some of the perceived failings of our leadership, GBC level and different levels. And he said, there's a leadership crisis. There are not that many devotees willing to or capable of taking leadership. And there isn't that much faith in leadership. And it becomes, which compounds the difficulties of leading. As Ravindra Swarup Prabhu was saying in the class this morning, people come up and say, you're not doing this right, you're not doing that right, and they don't know what it means, the difficulties of leading. So, yeah, I'm also one who's pointed out failings in leaders at different times. But so it's a delicate question. One thing I've also seen is that in many cases what we expect, that if there's something that we perceive which it doesn't seem right to us, we should be able to approach the concerned persons and discuss it with them and expect that things can be rectified or are our vision clarified. Or, but often it doesn't work like that. We don't have clear systems in our society for anything, hardly. Really. I mean, it seems to me like that. I mean, like for management or... I mean, what actually is the scope of the responsibility of temple president, GBC? There's no clear job definitions, and to a large extent the individuals who are performing those duties, they define it by their own activities, or depending on their own personality and the people they're dealing with. So it's not very clearly defined what anyone should be doing, and if there are difficulties or disputes, then theoretically you should be able to, to discuss with your local authority, and if you're not satisfied, you go to a higher authority. But a lot of the time, it just doesn't work. Actually, to be quite frank, so it's better to be a brahmachari and don't have any problems. But I don't know. My experience is that in many cases, you see, most of our leaders, they're like OD'd. OD'd, that's the term that Shivaram Maharaj used. You don't have much choice. OD'd is the term Shivaram Maharaj uses, which means overdosed. It's borrowed from the drug culture. Overdosed means you just, you know, too many things to do, and often the people who complain, it's like, you know, they're the ones who just go on and on and on. There's no end to it. And so oftentimes our leaders, they're also human beings. They can't deal with so much. They just can't deal with so many complaints, and so they just, you know, they just don't. But then the result, anyway, it's complex. So in many cases, you may just have to learn to live with it, or just go somewhere else. Or if it really bugs you too much, associate with devotees you can associate with. It's not easy. It can. Krishna consciousness is wonderful. Brahmachari life should be very simple and straightforward. And if you can remain in that simple, straightforward way of working, if you are fortunate to have a group of devotees you work with very nicely, that's good. That's very. Brahmacharis require that kind of sheltered situation. It's difficult to work in a situation where there are different currents of interest, and so brahmacharis, they require good, strong association. So try and get in. It's very important to be in a favorable situation. If we're in a situation with temple authorities who we really can't get on with them, it really bugs us so much that we, then it's probably better we go to another situation and find devotees that we can work with. Because if we're not happy, if you're not feeling happy in your devotional service, You can't make advancement, and you can't. Your enthusiasm to be Krishna conscious and to surrender, you're not going to be able to sustain that. So it's better. And if you find you go to that situation, another situation, you also can't work out there, another situation you can't work out there, probably there's something wrong with you. So these are all generalizations.
Another question to how to complain, how to proceed when
I must
stop.
Leave my knowledge back at least inside.
All right. Hare Krishna.
How to proceed when one has a problem with an authority, because you just mentioned that one can just approach him directly. Because usually we learn that you never approach him directly, but you always go to somebody who is higher. But you said first you approach him directly and then some authority of himself.
It depends. I mean, it can be general guidelines. They can give, but what?
So I'm asking the question because I have sometimes the feeling that if I go.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, yeah. It may be.
You may feel over.
If you go to someone higher than the person, may think that you're going behind, complaining about me behind my back.
Yeah.
That's
then
also the.
Breaks the relationship, but I didn't hear that.
One thing I found is that if you have problems with people, often if you speak to them, they become angry with you, or they try to defend themselves, or they start blaming you. But it's often very useful in such a circumstance, even if you're living in the same building with this person, to not speak to them directly, but to write them a letter, humble letter, saying, this is my perception, this, that, and the other. If you really need to, I mean. Otherwise, you can also just live with it if it's not such a big thing. If it really bothers you, you can make some complaint. Otherwise, just live with it. Chant Hare Krishna. And everyone's got their idiosyncrasies. So. Or if it's a small thing, you can. Mention to them. One thing that really bugs me is people who set their alarm clock very early and wake me up before I want to wake up, before I'm properly rested, and they don't get up. Mm-hmm. And they do it day after day after day. That really, I don't like that. There's something that. Yeah.
You mentioned that brahmachari life is not a life of compromises. I wonder how to. It seems like a contradiction.
Compromise means that you yourself follow. You're not trying to make compromises. But compromise is always there to some extent. In the sense that. Well, just like I gave the example, you might. Well, that. You might. If you're very sick, you may not go to Mangalati. Or if someone may say something which is, you know, philosophically a little strange, but you may not take it up at that moment, or for various reasons. It may be that you think the person's very neophyte, and he's being trained by others, and he's. It's not your position to. If you say to him, he may become disturbed, or he may be someone who's more senior than me, and it's not my position. So there may be some. When we say brahmachari life is not a life of compromise, again, it's not a life of such rigidity that borders on fanaticism. That's why I'm saying sattva gun. I mean, in sattva gun, one practices sattvic life. It's not just a matter of living in the country and listening to the birds chirping. That's not sattva. That's not necessarily sattva gun. In sattva gun, there's lots of rigidity, rules and regulations. Sattvic lifestyle, brahminical lifestyle means, you know, keeping clean, regularly bathing, following so many the sadhana. There must be sadhana, a lot of sadhana in sattva gun. But it means that one is developing sattva guna, is also sensitive to others. and willing to being sensitive enough to adjust one's own interest or what for the sake of others' well-being. He's not just thinking of himself. He's in dealing with others. He's not in Rajagun. One is always calculating at every moment how I can, what I can get from this person, and you'll speak in a way and act in a way that you will try to get some advantage from that person. Whereas in Sattvagun, one always thinks of one how to act in a manner for one's own spiritual advancement and for the benefit of others also. So when I say not a life of compromise, it means that we're clearly and firmly fixed on the principle. But that doesn't mean that so rigid as to be impractical. Of course, this word practical is often misused also. In the name of practicality, there's so much compromise. Real compromise. But adjustment. One should not compromise on principles, but one should be ready, if required, to make some adjustment on details. What was your question?
Like in the Western world, it's difficult to, well, we have to adjust, and then there's so much. The outside world is difficult to live this traditional Indian lifestyle.
Yeah, well, that's very prominent. I in my first day here.
Yeah.
Personally, I'm not very happy with the present understanding of men and women's roles in Krishna consciousness. There should be not such free mixing as I see goes on in many of the Western countries, even for grihasthas. You may say, well, we're all devotees, but still there are different bodies, and the attraction between male and female is the cause of bondage in the material world. And culture means to act in such a way that we don't exacerbate that, we don't inflame that. So it's not only in Vedic culture, but probably in Germany, you know, 50 years ago, there was caution in dealing between the sexes because of this, because illicit sex was considered something wrong. Sex outside marriage was considered something wrong. Even in the Western countries, excessive sex within marriage was also considered something very good. So it's this idea that men and women should mix very freely is just a product of demoniac culture. It's not Vaishnav culture at all, and it's a misunderstanding that men and women should mix very freely. What do they say? Because Prabhupada, in the early days, Prabhupada, it was like that, and then the heavy sannyasis came from India and they instituted all these things. I don't see it like that. In the early days, they were hippies, and Prabhupada didn't try to change everything all at once. But then Prabhupada he brought devotees to India, and he started preaching about these things. And devotees from the West who went to India saw how they're behaving like this, and then they instituted these things. And Prabhupada, he saw for years that the men and the women aren't all jumping together in kirtan. He didn't complain. In fact, in Los Angeles, quite early when they got their temple, he said that the men in Los Angeles, the balcony is there at the back, and he said that the men should stay down and the women up. So they separated. So, personally, I think it's a misunderstanding, and it's very difficult for brahmacharis. Where's the protection for brahmacharis if the women just deal with them as if they're... it seems to me, in a not just an equal to equal way, but almost a demeaning way. So it seems in America now, the two, three places I know where they have brahmachari ashrams, they don't have women at all. Yeah, because, you know, it's come full swing that women want to, as Prabhupada said when he said the women can dance on the balcony, so now they're dancing on the men's heads. So he joked like that. So men who are serious, then they don't, then they're just all right. It's remaining sad. If some people insist that that's how the role of behavior should be, then it's better that the brahmacharis just separate. Not necessarily that all women are like that. I mean, there are women in our movement who understand, who want to live as, you know, somewhat. So they don't want to, show I'm better than you, and they want to act in a chaste manner, actually, which Prabhupada writes about so much in his books, and which the Shastra writes about. But in the name of misunderstanding of how the sexes should interact, it's created an unfavorable situation. So then better you just have separate ashrams. That's what I say.
As usual, we always speak about brahmacharis as somebody who subordinate, who lives in ashrams. But you see often in our movement, as a person grows in Krishna consciousness, he kind of pushed to take responsibility. When brahmachari become a responsible person, that means he start to deal with all the headaches which he should avoid, to have a simple life. Maybe it's not anymore so simple, especially in the Western world.
Yeah, and when you become a manager, there are so many difficulties, and you can't say I'm a brahmachari, so they shouldn't exist. The world doesn't work like that. You can't say that I'm a brahmachari, that I'm a manager, I've been appointed as a manager, but I'm a brahmachari, so I just won't deal with all these things, they shouldn't exist. You have to take the responsibility. Managers who are brahmacharis, well, most brahmacharis get married, and when those who get into management, it usually happens fairly soon, especially if there are women in the ashram, because, you know, they like someone with who's looked up to, and this and that, obviously, someone who's kind of materially together. Yeah, then? How to maintain the simplicity of a brahmachari managerial life? Very difficult. No easy answer to a difficult proposition.
The question is, then, should brahmachari say, okay, I don't take any responsibility?
No, you should also, if required. But it's something to discuss with your spiritual guides. It's not that senior brahmacharis can't manage, even traditionally. When there are ashrams, then they also require someone to run them. Although in traditional society, it's not as complex. Neither the systems are as complex, nor are there complex tax systems and all this kind of thing, nor are there a million laws to regulate every breath you take, as in modern society. And nor are people so screwed up. And the whole society was very straightforward. Brahmachari, what is the role of brahmachari, was very clear. Everyone knew what is the role of Grihastha? Everyone knew. And so I'm saying that management is not outside of brahmacharis, although generally they may not. Sannyasis, heads of mutts. So even today, often sannyasis in mutts. Gaudiya mutts mostly, all the mutts are managed by. Well, they don't have women, or now they started some of them. But they're managed by sannyasi. And you see some of the sannyasis, they're just like fully, I'm talking about in India, they're just fully absorbed in management. But because the brahmachari mood is strong, and the culture is there, in Bengal, where most of the Gaudiya mutts are, then they don't fall down from their sannyas, or they're not, because people know how to, they manage, but people know how to, the whole society, people know what a sannyasi is, how they should interact with them, and they also have that understanding from their birth. And they're quite strict also. I mean, I didn't see any TV aerials in any Gaudiya mutts yet. Which you see in ISKCON ashrams, actually. What was that? Ravindra Subra, I was listening to one of his lectures. Right, he was talking about that, how in the brahmachari ashram, they bring in a TV for watching the Mahabharata or something, and then the next thing you see is they have kung fu movies because someone's practicing martial arts, and, you know, so what to do?
Yeah, in the West,
what is practical? Well, practically, someone has to. If you even if you're all brahmachari, someone has to manage. And except the most junior devotees, everyone. As soon as you start to become older, everyone has to take responsibility. In the name of being a brahmachari, you just can't avoid all responsibility. Managing a sankirtan party is like managing a small temple or something. There's so many details, and you have all the people you have to deal with, and the public you have to deal with, and the police, and all kinds of things. You never know what's going to happen. Parking, looking after the vehicle, so many things. So. An adult man has to be responsible. Either he takes the responsibility of a family, which brings with it so many other social responsibilities, or he takes responsibility in the service of the mission of the Sankirtan movement, the service of his guru. And when we say his guru, that means gurus, and we're all servants of Prabhupada. It's all parts of Prabhupada's mission. So it's not. I don't think it's very prominent here. It's quite prominent in India, but it's like, you know, people identify with their guru practically to the, you know, like they don't even see other. It's like guru groupism. That's what it is. Is you know, me, my guru, and all of us, his disciples. And, you know, we're kind of like a separate movement to other people's disciples. But I think that's not very common here. Everyone's working to serve Prabhupada, isn't it? That understanding is clearly there. That's a big drawback of our movement in India. They're trying to, anyway, why bother you with that? We're all here to serve Prabhupada's mission. Srila Prabhupada's mission, which is Lord Chaitanya's mission. So we should all cooperate on that basis. We were saying with the dog of my guru, but you also have to understand that your guru is a servant of Srila Prabhupada. So we're all here to serve Prabhupada's mission.
One of the main principles of renounced life that Lord Chaitanya is explaining is that we shouldn't speak Gamya Katha, and we shouldn't hear also. So could you explain something of like the dynamics, what's happening when Gramya Katha is being spoken, how does it affect us?
Gramya Katha means that which is spoken without consciousness of Krishna. You can talk about computers, cars, printing, history, all kinds of things, in consciousness of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada, he often spoke about Indian history. Seems he was quite interested in that. But everything in relation to Krishna, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Gramya Katha means that which is spoken in consciousness of sense gratification. Krishna Katha means that which is spoken in consciousness of serving Krishna. That's the simple way to understand. Srila Prabhupada often, when he was walking in England in the morning, he would say to people passing by, "Good morning." Devotees asked him why he was saying good morning. He said, because there's a tradition that they will say good morning back. And if they say good morning, if they wish good morning to a servant of the Vaishnavas, then they become benefited. Anything else? We're going to go to RT at 7 o'clock, is it? What's the time?
They're making yap, yeah. I don't think there's going to be RT.
There's not going to be RT?
15 to 7.
No, it's you don't think or you know that
yeah. RT has been cancelled? How can that be?
Connect the good things,
for the festival, they have a different program. Mm.
Is the RT would be later or?
Yeah, probably later.
7 o'clock is starting,
right?
All right. So what is anything else, sir?
Get more into the holy name and how to say, develop everyone's movement from the.
Yeah, our devotees often ask about how to improve our chanting. My standard answer is to get Srila Prabhupada's compilation from Srila Prabhupada's writings, Srinaramrita. Read a little of that every day. That will give us instruction and inspiration in chanting. It will help us.
We always try to find an external thing, a solution for our internal things. So we connect us a little bit to that, that we can always be peaceful in every situation, even if we have this with women or somebody's talking about movies coming, some other guest, or somebody said we are not disturbed with this circumstance.
So I didn't fully catch. What's the question?
The question is, what do we need to be peaceful inside and not try to make arrangements in external ways?
Well, both things are there. I mean, externally, there are a lot of arrangements. I mean, having a brahmachari ashram in itself is an arrangement. So for our spiritual advancement, that we're cut off from external influences. And so the atmosphere in the brahmachari ashram has to be maintained. So rules have to be there. So to maintain the external situation so that it's favorable, I mean, there have to be rules and we have to be We have to be aware of those rules, and if there are infringements of those rules, we have to try to correct that. So it's not that we just tolerate everything and everything's okay, and but the external situation, as it does very much affect us, so we try to make it. Srila Prabhupada set up the International Society of for Krishna Consciousness to create a society in which people could become Krishna conscious. So it requires, I mean, it's nice to say that we should be internally, we'll just be in Krishna conscious and then doesn't matter about anything else around us. That's a very high platform. If we can actually be on that platform, but then even if we are, we should try to help to make the atmosphere, not just the atmosphere sounds very vague, but the actual situation favorable so that others can also advance. What you say is true. We should, hopefully, we should try to be internally peaceful, but except for the most advanced devotees, unless we follow what might be considered some external practices, then we won't be peaceful internally. Chanting Hare Krishna, if you're fully Krishna conscious, then theoretically you can just sit and do nothing. Although actually that's not great. Krishna consciousness means fighting like Arjuna or doing something. But one could theoretically, you know, just in any situation be Krishna conscious, even if, for instance, you're thrown in prison with all kinds of the meanest, nastiest people on earth who are, you know, kicking you and spitting on you and calling you bad names, and you can still be Krishna conscious. But for most of us, it'll be very difficult in that situation. So, it is important to try to keep a good situation also. Rules and regulations should be followed. No, in the ashram there are various do's and don'ts, isn't it? Do rise before 4 o'clock. And then, don't eat kami food. There are various do's and don'ts which help us to be Krishna conscious. Is that what you're getting at? I'm not sure. Anyway. But you can't legislate that someone should be internally peaceful, but you can create an atmosphere which helps them to become Krishna conscious. And it helps us all. It's a group effort, isn't it?
Sometimes brahmachari is there, invited to be guests in the house of grihastas, or even soon kirtan, me and one other brahmachari, they invited us for the wedding.
So I don't go to weddings. I tell, if I get invited to a lot of weddings, I tell people I don't go. I do.
And about
but I can go to wedding receptions. I go and I speak. If I invite, I tell, I'll go to a wedding reception and I'll speak on ideal family life for Vaishnavas. That's all. But socializing is not for brahmacharis. That's all right for grihastas, but not for brahmacharis.
If we are invited to be guests in the house of some grihastas, is this good for the brahmacharis?
Well, it depends a lot on the grihastas. I wouldn't want to go if they're watching Kami TV and this and that. But traveling in India, and I don't know. It's maybe more than 1,000 times I've stayed in grihastas' homes during all these years. Especially in Bangladesh in the early days, we had no ashrams, except a small rented house in Dhaka. Every night I was in different grihastha's home. So in that case there wasn't any choice. Is it good? Maybe not the best thing, but you have to extend yourselves. Risk is there in preaching. So you're also, those who are renounced, they're also supposed to be merciful to the grihasthas. Mahad vichalinam rinam. What is that? Grihinam dina chetasa. Persons, they wander on this earth for the sake of uplifting those who are in the poor-minded grihasthas. Nanda Maharaj said that. Gaga Muni. And then also in Chaitanya Charitamrita, what is that? Mahadvichana. I'm not remembering now. There's another verse in which it said that. I'm still trying to remember. Jayanya. Nijakaj nahi tabu jayanya gwa. That the sadhus, they visit the homes of grihasthas, even though they don't have anything personally to gain there. They go there to help uplift them. Don't go alone. But you can do. But then there should be some program, not that you just go there and eat, and there should be some program. You mean when you're traveling Sankirtan or what?
Yeah, you know, sometimes when we are in the temple, just some grihasthas are coming and are saying, please come to our home, this and this day we will make prasadam and so on.
Tell me, you can ask them to invite some people, have a little kirtan and lecture also, and distribute prasad to others. Indian devotees or Western devotees or both?
Western.
Yeah, that's nice. Give them a little life. It's nice that they're and if they want some association. But it's best if you can say if you could, you know, maybe invite a few people and done at a weekend or something. I don't know. Saturday you're busy on Saturday and Sunday. The weekend's best for preaching. Outside preaching. Yeah, it's also important to those who have taken to Krishna consciousness to help them to stay in and keep them up. So that's also good. Do that. When temples are more established, they usually have divisions or devotees whose specific service is to congregational preaching. But you see, devotees like this who are, you know, they may be a little weak, maybe they're not fully chanting 16 rounds and this and that, but they're looking for associates. These are precious people. They've come to Krishna. They have a desire. Which you're going out and distributing books to try to invoke that desire. So don't neglect them.
Sometimes we meet nice people in the street, so they start to come. Sometimes ladies.
Yeah. No, when they're immediately turn them over, don't start preaching to them. I mean, on the street maybe a little bit, but then you immediately put them in touch with lady devotees. Don't start cultivating them.
What age? Now a few older, like
postmenopausal. You can preach to. But even then, it's you can. Postmenopausal means, you know, like getting on to 50. It's such a strange world. Sometimes, in even now in the West, there's somehow they're still interested in sex. Very strange. But you have to see also, if they're older, I mean, if you perceive there's something improper in their approach, then drop it. But many times what happens is, in the beginning they are actually interested, general interest, but by the influence of the material energy, even in the beginning, the motive on both sides is proper, but just by the influence of Maya it becomes, the ideas change. So better turn them over to someone else. One thing is, as a sannyasi, after taking sannyas, I started to have a lot more association with women than I did before. Not really association, but a sannyasi is a social figure. You may be called like that because of lack of sannyasi. You may be called for some social... They householders expect to invite sannyasis for lunch and show their babies and pat their baby on the head, which is also, I've seen that it's also good, in as much as children, they grow up and from the beginning of their life they see like guru, sadhu, and it means a lot to them. I've seen kids, you know, like they're teenage or older, and it's a clear spiritual influence in their life. It's who they look to from the beginning of their lives. So, but it does mean more interactions with women. That's true. So I still keep it a little. I don't. Even my female disciples, I don't. You know, I won't relate with them as freely as with male disciples. Keep a little distance. Get them married. If they're not married, tell them to get married. And when they're married, then they have to. They're a unit with their husband. That's all. Sannyasis, they're not supposed to have dealings with women. In the modern age, you can't avoid it completely, but there's no need that it should be any more than necessary. You can see them as spirit souls, but understand that there is a standard way of dealing so that there are no accidents. And they'll respect that if they're serious, if they have a proper understanding. And I appreciate it.
Maharaj, we just had in our temple 1 month ago, we had a big revolt from one group of Matajis that they have to be protected from Brahmacharya because we are very rude and we don't respect them and we don't open the doors to them. we don't look, with some exceptions, some are first class, but most of us. So we also admit on our side that sometimes we are, but what's the balance, you know?
The women should all be married. So talking about married women or what?
No, unmarried.
Yes, unmarried women means they always have so many problems. Married and have plenty of children, and then you'll be all right. It's an unnatural situation, actually, having unmarried men and women living together. Prabhupada, he saw the women in the Western countries are not protected, but therefore he made that arrangement. But it's not the duty of brahmacharis to protect brahmacharinis. Prabhupada said they should, all the women should be married, so they should get situated properly. That's all. They, and if they are to live as brahmacharinis in the temple, they should understand that the brahmacharya, what is the situation of a brahmachari. Rude means actually a brahmachari has no business interacting with women more than necessary, which means not very much in most cases, and that would be perceived as rude according to the norms of Kami society, but we have different norms. So better they all get married. Yeah. It's not so easy for them either, because to find a husband. So you should also understand it's very difficult for unmarried women in so many ways. Woman's body brings with it so many difficulties, more than men's. Menstrual period every month is very difficult for them. And, bearing children is very painful, and they're more emotional generally. So that's also another difficulty. And then menopause is also very, very difficult. So it's very difficult physically and mentally. So it's also great responsibility that to take you know, married life, take responsibility for a woman, which some of you may do in future.
What do you say to the point that women should also can become gurus? But I heard it's now discussed in GVC and even.
No, they allowed it, but no one's stepping forward.
I had one.
From the spiritual point of view, there is no objection. Anyone, Jai Krishna Tattva Veda Shai Guru Hoy. Traditionally, there haven't been many women gurus because for various reasons. The social role of women is different in Varnashram. So women are mothers. They're busy with children. And generally, they're not so much educated in Shastra. They may be, but generally because they're busy with children, they're not so much. Normally women have quite a lot of children. That's normal in the age before contraceptives became widely available. And then women with children and then grandchildren. Generally women are more inclined to sense gratification as much as they're... It's generally speaking, and we can observe, and it's stated in Shastra, in home and, you know, like socializing with relatives and wearing nice clothes and all this kind of thing. So socially they're generally not trained for that role. Their general tendency is to be somewhat reserved, leadership role, and if they're to be a guru, means they become a public figure, which that being reserved doesn't go very well with that. So, seeing as the conditioning which goes with both the male and the female body, but particularly with the female body, is very strong. Overcome it is very difficult. The Prabhupada gave the example of Gandhari, even though she was a great personality, she was so fixed in her principles that she had voluntarily accepted. so as not to be superior to our blind husband in that respect, that out of envy, when Kunti Devi bore a child before her, she thumped her womb, her pregnant child, and as a result she had 101 children. So Prabhupada knows it's very difficult to overcome that nature. So there are examples, you know, some in our personal role of men. Understand why the traditional roles are there as they are. You see, in the modern in the Western countries, and now all over the world, they're promoting this idea of women's liberation. Women have been, I think, like the family society. Women have been exploited and misused, and they don't have the same opportunities. And I feel that a lot of what's going on in the name of equal opportunities for women in Christendom is highly influenced by this demoniac propaganda. It's not, they're not clearly understanding what, why there are clearly designated and different roles in Varnashram society for men and women. What is, there's a reason for that. It's equal opportunity to serve Krishna, but not necessarily in the same way, because the woman's body has the natural function of bearing children, which takes all their attention, and it requires that women should be with children. They need to look after them. But in the modern age, they stop that function to a large extent, and so that the women's natural good qualities that come with being a mother, they're not fulfilled in that way, and they want to be fulfilled by being like a man. It's a whole social disaster. So the Varnashram help people live according to their psycho-physical condition and develop Krishna consciousness. And it's designed to help everyone advance in Krishna, towards the goal of Krishna consciousness. So to say that women have to have the same role, otherwise they're not having the same opportunity to advance in Krishna consciousness, is a misunderstanding. And it causes disturbance. I mean, I was disturbed today when I was called to go on the altar for the Abhishek, I expected to go side by side, show me this all over again. Literally pushing me out of the way. I don't want even German coming. Quality. And for me, they don't take it further. You call them in, they become more. And they say they're dancing on your hands. So, these things should, these social roles should be very seriously thought about and considered. Why did Prabhupada speak so much about Vedic culture? Was it something just, you know, some kind of, he couldn't think of anything else to speak of, and therefore he spoke about it. He wrote so much about it. And he ran out of things to speak about, so okay, let's talk about Vedic. He wanted this institute as far as possible, because it is favorable to the cultivation of Krishna consciousness. And the attraction between man and woman is the basic principle of material life. So therefore, in any traditional society, not only Vedic society, but there is clearly demarcated differences in roles. And there are not only the mother-bearing reason, but women have, in some ways, they're superior to men. I mean, in looking after children, they're better. That's they naturally inclined to do that. And that's such an extremely important function in society. The children are not looked after properly, then the next generation is worse than the previous one. And that's going on generation by generation in the West. The one generation, which is bad enough, thinks the next one is terrible. So, there's so many, it should be very deeply understood. But personally, I find it a very shallow approach that just, yeah, okay, men, women, equal, all the same, thus finished, without even thinking about it very clearly. And seeing how to implement or move towards the principles that Shastra taught and Prabhupada taught within a society. Our society is operating in the Western world in very different conditions. But how to move towards that, or what should be the... These should be very carefully thought about before we just start, you know, just saying, okay, now let's get back to the 1960s, men and women all dancing together. Another thing they say, women should be called Prabhu and not Mataji. They don't like to be called Mataji because it's said in a demeaning way. But then you should give the proper education. That's the proper thing to say, and you should give the proper education of what proper attitude with which it should be said. Otherwise, if it's said in a demeaning way, then whatever else you call, and that will also come in a demeaning way if the attitude isn't changed. Just like they used to say spastic for a spastic, but then that became a pejorative term, because people in their nastiness looked down on spastics. So then they called them physically handicapped, which is a euphemism. Then that became a pejorative term. So now they call them physically challenged. And then there was Negroes, and then blacks, and now they're called Afro-Americans. There's no use to change the word. If you want the real effect, you have to change the attitude. So Mataji, or to address a woman as mother, is the Shastric injunction, which Prabhupada said. How many times have you heard Prabhupada say that? So if you think that it's being said with the wrong attitude, then let's work on changing the attitude. Or maybe the women themselves need to learn how to act like mothers more. That's also there. A lot of education is required. Anyway, you got me going on. Well, that's one of my main gripes. You know what that means? Complaint about various things going on in our movement at the present time. They made a massive misunderstanding of social roles. But it's tough in the Western world. I mean, forget men and women being equal. Women are dominant, even legally. You know, the women can just divorce the husband and take all his money. It's not equality. The women aren't. It's very difficult to try to practice social roles in an atmosphere in which both men and women in the modern age feel that there's something very bad about women being in any way submissive to men. So that's also a consideration when you want to... By the way, when you say women are submissive to men, that means they have a limited skill. Women traditionally don't mix up with so many men anyway. They're within their family circle. It's not that I'm a brahmacharya and you're a woman and you have to do what I... You have to be submissive to me. No. They're submissive to their father, their husband, their grown-up sons. Like that. They have a limited circle. And then you don't make friends with men outside their family group. And women don't have men friends. Men don't have women friends. There's mothers, there's aunts, there's daughters, there's sisters. But you don't have just friends. Not relationship. It's just not there. It's a very different society. I mean, what's going on is, there any idea to find out what it's going on? There's a thing called being politically correct. In Tamil society, if you don't go along with women's liberation, you get verbal tomatoes and other words. And it seems like that in this country. If you don't agree with all these things, you get very strange. Lose both ways, isn't it? They're after you, and if you don't agree, then still you have to. Is that what you're saying? You lose both ways. Either you agree, you're nice to them, and then they got you, because you know they're nice to you, and then they're a little bit more nice to you, and a little bit more nice, and then you want to get married to them. Because that's, you think they're so, that's their way to get them. And then, and if you're not nice to them, then that means then you're also saying they're saying that you're causing them frustration. And what is that you're saying? To them? So you lose both ways. Yeah, I never had such a thing. No, I don't know. No, what's that? Tell it?
Yeah,
tell it loudly so everyone can hear.
Maybe Panchatatrava can tell it better. He knows more details. Huh?
Is this a public story?
He was telling this story in Prague. I wasn't physically present, but it was recorded even like Ramachal and everything. And it was like managing the temple in the England and in London.
Mm-hmm.
It was long term, Brahmacharya was very strict. I mean, he was saying that every time some Mataji wanted to speak to him in the temple, some Mataji from the temple, so she had to announce it like 3 days before.
Tell him, not announce it in the temple.
He wanted to speak to temple president, he was temple president.
Mm-hmm.
Mataji wanted to speak to temple president, so she has to say it 3 days before, and then she could speak.
Right.
The last rule, you know, schedule. And then,
you mean about any little thing?
Yeah, I don't know the detail, but maybe
if
some
she
discussion
want,
she wanted
yeah,
to
yeah, yeah. Didn't come back, she didn't come present.
And then he always kept like 50 brahmacharis in his office. Like
yeah.
He wanted to say he was very, very strict on the rules and everything, but then just some Matajis came together and they just wanted this Mahadevi to become white. So they invented some Operation White. They called Operation White. We had Mataji just fiction bar.
Thank you.
So it's like some power in this Mataji.
Yeah, they have a lot of power, no doubt. It's not a very healthy atmosphere. They're so. They may be envious of the brahmacharis that they can practice so strictly,
yeah.
And they have that facility. But then they should be, again, they need to be educated that the woman's role is to be a wife and a mother. And we need to set up social systems. We don't have them. If not, they're trying to be a brahmacharini, but they can't. I was recently told there's one lady devotee who's, I guess she's about, I don't know, 45 years old or something now. I don't think she's ever been married in ISKCON. She's quite an old devotee. She lives in India. And she preaches, she travels and preaches. And I heard she had said something about she wanted that women, in course of time, they'll make them sannyasis and this and that. But then just 2 days ago, and when I